Well, we're going to see if we can finish this five-part series on wise family living that has grown into 15 parts. And no doubt I'll get to the end of number 15 and say, well, I really ought to end on an even number. But we'll see. If we'll look at Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, we spent a couple of weeks on discipline. This will be the second week on instruction or education in the Lord. Last time we saw that that Christian education or instruction in the Lord begins in the home in an informal sense. It's going on all the time at home, both by word and deed from parents. Then we looked at education in the church and saw that in the church we are able to educate on a very limited basis. And I'm not sure about exactly what all I said about that, but I would want to at least underscore that I'm convinced after 15 years in the ministry that the church cannot itself properly educate covenant children. It's not a task that we are equipped to do. We do the best that we can. We have a couple of services on Sunday in which the word's preached. We have Sunday school. We have some other things that go on periodically. But the church can in no way properly educate its children on its own. And that's why the family plus church, my conviction is, it's inadequate. It will not provide a Christian education for our children. And so the covenant community needs more than homes and churches. It needs schools as well. And, this has really come home to me in teaching the catechism class, trying to do in 1 hour what, if you had 15 minutes a day or even 5 minutes a day in a regular school setting, would be so much easy to accomplish. Likewise with our music program, try to squeeze into an hour at night what needs to go on in over several hours during the week. You just can't do it as a church. You cannot give the time to the important subjects that need to be examined in the course of an education if the covenant youth, the children of the church, are to be properly educated. So that then led to a discussion of the school. What do we want from the school? We want knowledge, i.e. academic competence, instruction in all of the major fields of academic study. We want that, secondly, in a Christian framework, Scripture providing the interpretive lens by which we evaluate what's being taught. Ideally, this would mean a Christian curriculum being taught by Christian teachers to students who are coming out of Christian homes. That is, out of homes which have shared convictions about education and how education is to be done. The third thing I want to say about the schools generally, before we look at different kinds of school choices, is that I believe that our education ought to be characterized by a Western bias. Now, admittedly, this is a little bit more controversial, but I think that it ought to proceed on the assumption that Western civilization is superior to all others. Now, well, how can you say such a thing? Well, let me just explain in a few sentences what I'm talking about. It says in Galatians 3 that Jesus came in the fullness of time. Part of that fullness of time is the fact that he came to a world that was speaking the Greek language. And so we have Greek New Testaments full of terminology that flows right out of Greek thought. Now, that's not an accident. That's a part of the divine plan. The Messiah didn't come to an Asian culture, an Eastern culture. It was intentional that it should be a Greek culture with Greek language characterized by Greek concepts. It was intentional in the fullness of time that Christ came to a world dominated by a Roman civilization. And so had learned the lessons of Rome about the rule of law and learned what Rome had to offer in the way of political organization and as well as practical things like architecture and building. those civilizations combined with the Christian religion then gave us medieval Christendom. I think that we would expect as Christians that a civilization that has the benefit of 1,000 years of Christian influence is going to be better than one that doesn't. It's not to say it's perfect. It's not to say it doesn't have its flaws. It's just to say that I think it would be our assumption, our presupposition, our bias, as it were, that the civilization that emerges when you combine the classical world with the biblical world and the result is Christendom, that that's going to be a better civilization. I believe that the Reformation ought to be seen as an era in which progress for humanity takes place. The Reformation then leading to the Enlightenment and the modern world. I think that by and large we endorse that and see the superiority of that to all other civilizations. Again, I would go back to Winston Churchill's famous statement that democracy is the worst of all forms of government except for all of the rest. Well, I'd say free markets, that's the worst form of economics except for all the rest. I would say Western civilization is the worst of all civilizations except for all the rest. It's only in Western civilization that we have the concepts of human dignity, the importance of the individual conscience, where there's the recognition of basic liberties like the freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to assemble, freedom of religion, freedom to petition the government. It's only in the West that you have the rule of law. It's only in the West that you have representative democracy. It's only in the West that you have free markets. It's from the West that we have received an emphasis upon education and science. It's the West that gave us the scientific revolution. And I would include in this survey Western art, Western music, Western architecture, and Western literature. I'm not at all ashamed to say that the music of Bach and Beethoven and Mozart's the greatest music that's ever been written. The Western tradition in music is the music of the human race. I'm not ashamed to say that the art of Michelangelo and Da Vinci and Rembrandt is the great art of the human race. And so the cultural achievements of Western civilization as it has evolved and progressed and interacted with the Christian religion is one that is superior to others, and that it has benefited from its interaction with the Christian religion. It has had the benefit of that interaction, and so is superior to and ought to be taught in favor of those places, those civilizations in the world that are not characterized by these things. You don't find these things in Asian civilizations. You don't find them in African civilizations. You don't find them in Muslim civilizations and cultures. So in our schools, we want knowledge. We want that knowledge communicated in the Christian framework, which includes the curriculum, the teachers, and the students. And we want it taught from the bias of Western civilization, recognizing the superior cultural achievements. And I would say one of the lessons of the September 11th attacks is that there are any number of people are taking a step back and saying, what is it that we have in Western civilization that is worth preserving, that you do not find in the rest of the world, that we need to defend, and that we will lose if we are not ready to stand up and defend it? And one of the real tragedies, as I see it, of the 21st century, is that we have reared a generation that has no idea what we have. That doesn't know what the benefits we have living in a Western civilization, who are so ignorant of what the rest of the world looks like, are so ignorant of how hard fought and difficult it was for us to gain these freedoms and liberties and principles that characterize our civilization, that they're not in a position to zealously defend them. Not recognizing their distinctiveness and uniqueness in the flow of human history. Let me move on then and speak of then where we are to find such schools who will teach what we think that our children need to learn. And what I'm going to say is this, that I think that every choice involves some compromises. Some involve more compromises than others. And there's any number of different factors that come to play, both what they teach and who is teaching it, and other things like location and cost. And I want to say at the outset that I am not an absolutist on any of these subjects and have never been. I think it's a wisdom issue. I don't think there's an absolute. I have a friend in the ministry who 15 years ago would have stood up here and said, unless you have your children in a Christian school, you're sinning against God. I just think that's wrong. He thinks it's wrong now too, by the way. But I'm not an absolutist on it. I think there are a variety of factors that come to play. And that you have these high ideals and these high principles that we are looking for, that we want to promote. And sometimes when we can't find them, we need to go out and start our own schools. Christian people have been doing that for a long time. In fact, it's hard to find schools that haven't been started by one group of Christians or another, whether in Europe or in America. So we've long been in the habit of starting our own schools when we can't find what we want. But at any given place, in any given time, we are faced with choices in the real world, and all of those choices involve compromises to one degree or another. So let me review some of the possibilities as we look for places outside of the regular family context, outside of the few hours that the church has, that is the ongoing hour by hour, day by day, school, quote unquote, setting. Where can we look to find this kind of an education? Number one, homeschool. Number two, Christian schools. Number three, secular schools. Let me say a few things about each one of these, knowing how dangerous it is for me to say anything at all. One, homeschools. This is what I believe that we can say about homeschools, that it is the single most difficult form of education to do well, but done well, it is probably the best. The pros, I would say, is that one-on-one tutorial system. I don't know how you can improve upon it. You got all the attention of a teacher all day long. You can explore whatever you want to explore. You've got all the flexibility in the world. It's incredibly efficient in that you're not taken up with the time of other students. All the attention of the teacher on that child all day long, every day. A one-on-one tutorial is the way the kings and queens have forever been taught. How could you improve upon that? That's what I would say is the positive. The negative is, one, I think it's the most difficult of all forms of education. To one person to teach all the subjects, often with multiple children. My hat is off to you if you can do it. I think it is extraordinarily difficult to do it well. Another negative, you lose some of the social aspects of learning. There are any number of children who, when mama says, look, I want you to sit down and write, they're going to whine and fuss and carry on when it's just mom. You put them in a classroom with 15 other children, and the teacher says, take out your paper. They take out their paper. Start writing, they start writing. There's a certain social aspect of education that's actually a very positive thing. I know we talk very negatively most of the time about peer pressure, but this is one of the positives of peers. Your peers are all doing the work. You're going to do the work too. And so there are certain advantages to that. Another of the negatives is that you lose some of the education that takes place peer to peer. If I went back to my seminary days, I learned as much in the common room at Trinity College in Bristol as I did in any classroom. That is, I learned it as I argued with fellow students. As we come out of class and we say, did you hear what he said about that? What did you think about that? I thought it was great. Well, I thought it was terrible. And we would go back and forth while we were sipping our tea. As much education took place, student to student, as in any place. The other thing about peer education that I think is valuable is that I think that your peers knock the rough edges off of you. And there's a lot to be said for that. What the older folks will tolerate and the younger folks will tolerate, your peers will not, and it's true all life long. You know, the little ones will worship you, the older ones will pat you on your head, but the ones who are your age will not put up with it. And that's good. Your peers will tell you the way it is. They'll tell you when you're acting like a fool. They'll tell you when you're silly. They'll tell you when you're obnoxious. Your peers will do it. There's a lot to be said for that. And if you're going to function in this culture, it's valuable to know what the peers think. It's valuable to know how to conduct yourself. There's a way to conduct yourself in Asia. There's a way to conduct yourself in the Muslim world. There's a way to conduct yourself in 21st century America. And your peers, by and large, are the people who let you know. And some of that's horrible, I know, because that's why, you know, you've got your daughters trying to wear short skirts and tight clothing all the time. So some of that peer pressure is to be resisted at all costs. But there is a valuable aspect to peer pressure. It is sanctifying to be among your fellows and let them take their shots at you. And as parents, it's very, very hard. I know. You see your kids getting beat up by some kids, and you know, it just pains you. You want to go in there, straighten the situation out. But in the providence of God, you have to say it's a sanctifying thing. They learn things from them that they need to know that they learn nowhere else. The other negative is that homeschooling tends to be unstructured. That's a positive in some senses, but it also can tend to be undisciplined. You can always wait till tomorrow. And that's a problem, given human nature, given our tendency to put things off. When you have an unstructured environment like that where you can just put it off till tomorrow, you tend to start doing that. You just wait till the next day, wait till the next week, wait till the next month, wait till the next semester, wait till the next year. The demands of an academic calendar in a classroom are self-disciplining for teachers and students alike. So that would be homeschool. The best of all forms of education, if done well, but the single most difficult approach to education of which I have any awareness. Okay, second, the Christian school. I would say this is the second best option if it is truly Christian. The positives are that you have the home, the church, and the school all working in harmony one with the other. That is a valuable thing. I don't like the idea of my children growing up and hearing one thing at church and another thing at home and another thing in the school. Or, more likely, the church and the home saying one thing and going to school and hearing a whole different message. Especially at the younger ages. I think it's very confusing. It's disruptive. It's destabilizing. I think that you want the home, the church, and the school as partners saying the same things, teaching from the same perspective, reflecting the same convictions or values. Home, church, school, partners working together to rear our children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Teachers then would be Christian. Curriculum would be Christian. Or it would be a curriculum wherein the study of the non-Christian world is being examined from a Christian perspective. Which is what I mean as if you were here, last time, you'll recognize what I'm saying. And from families that are Christian, where there is a body of shared convictions and values that from these families, so that you are working together, not my family against the whole world, but this community of families together who make up the families that are committed to the given academic institution. I don't believe the Christian school is a panacea. It cannot replace the parents. I also think that long school days will tend to undermine the home, because it undermines family authority and children become peer dependent and look to the peer group more than to the family for their source of authority and source of standards and tastes and desires. But it has much to commend it. The negative is mainly anecdotal. And that is that there's this very disturbing tendency that any number of parents and educators have noted that children in Christian schools, for some reason, sometimes seem to be inoculated against the gospel. It's just an observation based on years of youth work and of being a pastor. It just was amazing to me. The kids in the public schools were the most fired up, ready-to-go Christians, and the kids in the Christian schools were yawning. You know, they didn't care anything about being in Sunday school. I guess they'd been in chapel or Bible class during the week. And so there was a disturbing lack of zeal, a lack of enthusiasm about the things of God from the children who were in the Christian school. I'm not able to really explain that. I think that had sometimes something to do with the fact that the Christian schools were not very thoroughly Christian. They were not authentically Christian. And so the children were being turned off by something that approached the real, but really wasn't, almost, like I say, like an inoculation. You don't really give them smallpox. You give them something that's a shadow of a smallpox, and then they don't ever catch the smallpox. And you give them something that's a shadow of Christianity, and you know they develop a distaste for the real thing, because the shadowy form of it is insipid and weak and hypocritical. And so it's important that the Christian school be authentically Christian. There's a sense in my mind that I would prefer really a clearer distinction. If it's going to call itself Christian, then it'd be Christian, thoroughly Christian, not partially Christian, not with a compromised or watered down or Pollyanna version of Christianity, but the real thing, with academic rigor and discipline. So the second best option, the one that I think is going to be the most reasonable choice for most parents, is going to be the Christian school. It has this great advantage of the home, the church, and the academic institution all working in harmony together. There is this anecdotal observation, though, that is troubling about the graduates of those institutions having less enthusiasm for the gospel of Christ than one would have expected. A third option is the secular school. Now, again, I'm not and have never been an absolutist about this. Whether we're talking about a public school or a private school, the fact is your children have to be mainstreamed at some point. Right? You can keep them in Christian institutions through elementary school, through middle school, through high school, through college, through graduate school. But at some point, then, they leave the safe environment of the Christian school and they're out there in the world. The only question is, at what point is it wise to mainstream them? It's reasonable, it seems to me, that you build the heads about your children while they're immature, before they have mature judgment and are able to deal with the world. The question is, at what point are they of sufficient maturity to deal with the world provided by the secular environment? And I would argue that that's going to depend. It's going to depend on the family. It's going to depend on, especially upon the individual child. It's going to, as for the decision and how it's made, it's going to depend a lot on circumstances. The availability of schools, the availability of funds. So there's a number of factors that go into it. Negatively, with respect to the secular school, I think that it's the worst choice and by far the most dangerous. And the reason is you've got these teachers, these academicians that are not Christian, who are not teaching from a Christian perspective, not using a Christian curriculum in the context of students who themselves are not Christians and may have convictions and practices and may have been exposed to things that are the antithesis of the Christian religion, and your children are being thrown into the fray. So that's dangerous. Does that not strike you as dangerous? That strikes me as a very dangerous thing to do. I would say especially at an elementary school level, to throw your very immature, ignorant, I mean that in a negative sense, but they are. They don't know very much. They're not very emotionally mature. And you've got the white lab-coated professors, as it were, teaching your children authoritatively about this and that and the other. I don't think that that's at all a desirable situation. I would call it a dangerous situation, an unhealthy situation in most cases for our children. That's not what we're going to want. Now, I understand, again, because of location, because of cost and economic factors, sometimes it may be that that's what a given parent, a given family, a given child have to do. And that's why we can't be absolutists about it, because there are circumstances that force choices and wisdom given the whole picture of the whole family. The total situation forces a decision that is not the ideal. But I think even though it is not the ideal, it needs to be recognized that it is that it is a dangerous situation, and therefore adjustments, compensation be made for that. Some of the positives of a secular school. Often it can be academically of the first order. The advanced placement classes, for example, in the public schools, at least where I came from. I'm not sure about how it is in Savannah, actually. But the AP track can often be academically superior. Then there are private schools that have outstanding academic programs. But that would be positive. The cost can sometimes be a very positive factor. The public schools are free. That can be a very important factor for Christian families that are struggling to survive. The other positive, I would say, is I'm also interpreting as a negative. The adversarial environment for many children can be a very positive thing. The adversarial environment in my high school was for me a very, very positive thing, and even more so in college. The fact that I had to defend my faith every single day in class and among students and amongst professors and think through from a Christian perspective what that professor was saying in sociology and what the other one was saying in psychology and what the other one was saying in history and what the other one was saying in biology, the fact that I was forced to do that meant that I was going home every day and reading and writing furiously from a Christian perspective every class that I had. This happened particularly after my sophomore year. The summer of between sophomore and junior years, I attended the Jesus Christ Light and Power House that met at the Kappa Sig fraternity at UCLA. What that was a school that was run by Hal Lindsey, the late writer of the late great Planet Earth. You want to know where I was eschatologically in college? Well, there you go. I went there to study under Hal. I worked moving furniture during the day. At night, I slept, lived, ate at the Kappa Sig House, at the Light and Power House, at the UCLA campus all summer long. And I took classes from Hal Lindsey and his associates. And Hal's class, to give you a little perspective of history, and I knew it at the time, actually, wasn't worth anything. But his associates taught some superb classes. And one of them had us reading Francis Schaeffer. Well, reading Schaeffer completely transformed my last 2 years of college. I went back in creative writing class. Every paper I wrote was on a Christian theme. Old Testament, every paper I wrote was defending the authority and integrity of the Old Testament. I took a psychology class. I was attacking the professor's view of human nature. It completely transformed my academic experience. Reading Francis Schaeffer and then going back into an adversarial environment in which I had to think it all through. In light of what the Bible said, in light of what the professors were saying, and in the context, frankly, of the ridicule, the mockery of students for whom Christianity was not a credible option at all. Certainly not an intellectually credible option. So the adversarial environment can be a positive. Certain children, certain time. So the positive, the academics, the cost if it's a public school, and the adversarial environment. The negative is that you're in a fight the entire time. You're fighting with a secular and relativistic, if not atheistic, philosophy, whether overt or more less overt, less obvious, nevertheless, it is there. And therefore, more is required of you if your children are in a secular environment than is required of you if you are, if you have them enrolled in a Christian school. By what I'm saying. I'll personalize it. If I have my children in a public school, I believe that I would have to be regularly, if not daily, debriefing everything they were learning. Now that's the way I could transform it into a Christian education. Do you take the mathematics teacher? You know, I can hire a math tutor who's not a Christian to teach my child mathematics, but at the end of the tutorial session, I'm probably going to sit down and say, what did he say? You know, what did he say about absolutes? What did he say about math? That would be one of the easier subjects. But did you see that you can do that? You can get a technician. You can get somebody who knows the knowledge, the facts, and you can have them teach those things to your children. But then there's a tremendous burden that falls on you as a parent then. Almost as weighty a burden as falls on the homeschooling parent. You're going to have to debrief every subject virtually every day. Find out what's being said, talk it through, give the Christian perspective on the subjects that are being taught, on the things that are being said, the values are being communicated, so that you take the data that is being imparted by the secular school and you transform that into a sanctified Christian education by correcting the errors that are being made, by building upon and clarifying our convictions with respect to all those things that are being taught. Now, what I think is needed is honesty and wisdom on the part of all of us as we make these educational choices, which, by the grace of God, are going to result in our children being brought up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, so that they have a distinctively Christian education. If you are going to teach them at home, you need to be honest about whether or not you're going to do it well. And you need to have wisdom to discern whether or not this is going to have the kind of impact upon the family that the family can bear. You see, well, that's a wisdom issue. How is this going to affect us? If you're going to put them in a Christian school, you're going to need to be honest with yourself about whether or not this is a Christian school in a true sense, whether or not the Christianity that is taught there is biblical Christianity and it is taught with integrity. And if it's not, you need to know that you're going to need to follow up on that. You're going to have to be alert and aware of your children being inoculated. If you're going to put your children in secular schools, then again, you're going to need to be honest and have wisdom about whether or not you are going to have the energy, whether or not you're going to have yourself the integrity to follow up on what is being taught and debrief your children and correct the errors of the secularists and teach the positive content of the Christian view of truth in the areas in which your children are being taught. And you need to ask yourself, do you know the child that is being affected? Do you know that child's strengths? Do you know his or her weaknesses? Are you alert to their areas of vulnerability? And prayerfully, carefully think through the educational choices that we have. And frankly, in Savannah, they are limited. They are more limited than they are in Atlanta or in a major metropolitan area. Frankly, I know there's a desire on the part of many of you to have other choices, to have other options available to you. They're not here. And so that then means that we live in the real world where they're an infinite range of choices where when you come down to it, you've got to make a decision about it's either going to be here or there, one or the other. Finally, you've got to enroll them somewhere, and yet you're responsible to see that they are reared in the instruction of the Lord. In other words, that they are provided with a Christian education. And that means difficult, prayer-saturated choices, decisions being made by parents. And I think as well, with respect to one another, that we need to be giving one another freedom in those choices. Because there is such a range of factors, so many different factors that come to bear on any given family at any given time, at any given place. The factors of cost, the factors of location, the impact on the rest of the family, on siblings, on parents. So that It's very difficult for us to assess the choices that other families are making. It's very, very difficult for us to evaluate what is the right choice for them. In fact, there's really a sense in which we'd have to say it's impossible for us to really know the factors that they are wrestling with that lie behind the decision. And frankly, some of us are going to make unwise decisions along the way. Some of us are going to look at the factors and add it up wrong and make poor decisions and put our children in dangerous places, places where they ought not to be. Perhaps being swayed by factors that really betray a lack of spiritual mindedness. Factors such as pride and reputation and those sorts of things. But having even said that some of the members of the covenant community are going to make foolish decisions, unwise decisions. Nevertheless, most of us are in no position to evaluate those decisions. And so we need to be giving each other freedom to make those decisions.